Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Live from Winnipeg, it's Talk is Jericho.
Well, isn't that special?
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll, and it's time for the must-anticipated Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling you from sunny Hawaii. Hey, you know what you call a dog that's underwater? A subwoofer. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Ah, wow. That's a stinker. Duff even told me it's going to be a stinker, but he's called it in from Hawaii, enjoying a little fun in the sun. He's got a house out there. The life of a rock and roll superstar. Thank you, Duff. And we got a lot more fun on the show today. Jamie Burwood and Thomas Cena from the SNL Hall of Fame podcast are here. And we're doing our top 10 picks for the SNL cast members Hall of Fame. We each made a top 10 list and we're going to run it down. We can pick any cast member from the show's nearly 50-year history. That's so crazy. While some of them overlap, some were surprising too. I'll tell you this, my number one pick did not even make Jamie or Thomas's top 10 at all. It's insane. We'll run down our list. We'll talk about why we picked that person and slotted them in the position we did. We remember sketches and funny catchphrases, share some history and trivia about the show in general. We talk about the few times that WWE and SNL collaborated. We'll even hear my personal story about the time I was almost the guest host of Saturday Night Live. I'm not going to tell you who picked these cast members, where they rank, but I will say that Will Ferrell, Eddie Murphy, Dana Carvey, Kristen Wiig, Adam Sandler, Kate McKinnon, and John Belushi all included. So our top 10 cast member picks for the SNL Hall of Fame is coming up. And don't forget to go check out the SNL Hall of Fame podcast. Wherever you listen to podcasts, it's very cool. And don't forget about Chris Jericho's Rockin' and Wrestling Rager at Sea of the Four-Leaf Clover. February 2nd is the big day. We set sail in just about 2 weeks with an amazing lineup of talent. And the ship will be the only place you can see Jerichohausen versus the Guns, the only place to see the inaugural crowning of the Jericho Cruise Oceanic Championship. So much great AEW talent will be out there as well. The Lucha Brothers, Rey Fénix, Penta, El Cerro Mierdo, Jade Cargill, Swerve Strickland, the entire Jericho Appreciation Society, the acclaimed Wardlow, Mark Henry, so many more. It is going to be jam-packed, Quiet Riot's there, Fozzy's playing 3 shows, Talk is Jericho live, 4 different Talk is Jerichos. We're going to our own private island for the first time ever in Great Stirrup Cay. Still some cabins left, so book yours now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. You still have a chance, a last-minute treat to go on the vacation of a lifetime. All right, it's time for the top 10 cast members for the SNL Hall of Fame right here, right now on Talk is Jericho.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I'm just a caveman. I fell in some ice and later got thawed out by some of your scientists. Your world frightens and confuses me. Sometimes the honking horns of your traffic make me want to get out of my BMW and run off into the hills or whatever.
All right, so we're here with Jamie and Thomas, and Jamie and I have met before when Jamie did the Tragically Hip podcast, which we got together for probably 6 years ago or so. Yeah. Do you still have the Hip podcast?
It's funny you ask, because I'm rebooting it with a different spin. I've taken two people who have never heard of the Tragically Hip and I'm taking them through the discography one record at a time.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because that's the thing. When you have such a strictly blinders on podcasts, all you can talk about is the hip. And when the hip doesn't exist anymore, I'm sure you kind of run out of things to talk about after a while.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, and in between time, you have started a new podcast. You reached out to me. We've been talking for a while about doing this. It is the Silent Live Hall of Fame podcast. And kind of discuss what the concept of the podcast is and how did you and Thomas get started on this.
Thomas, do you want to take it?
Yeah, sure. So, well, I don't know. It's Jamie's baby, right? I mean, he's the Lorne Michaels, I guess, of the SNL Hall of Fame. So go for it, Jamie.
It's just one of those things that Hall of Fames have always bothered me. I think that, you know, the criteria for them is really up in the air and it's challenging. And I look at Saturday Night Live the way I look at a bunch of different things. And I thought that it could use a Hall of Fame. I thought that there is probably 1,000 people who have, maybe more, who have taken part in writing, hosting, being a musical guest, or being a cast member on the show. There's like 150 cast members at least. And some of them are great, and some of them are elevated above that greatness. And I think that those people, you know, that upper echelon, the Hall of Famers, if you will, deserved a Hall of Fame. And so, I mean, that's literally where it came from.
So does each episode entail a different cast member that you think is in the Hall of Fame? Is that kind of how you do it?
So basically the way it rolls out is we nominate 30 or so nominees, and each episode is one of those either cast members, hosts, musical guests, or writers.
Gotcha.
And they're featured. It's like an interview with an expert on that person.
Oh, cool.
They then go into detail about why that person should be in the Hall of Fame. And that's sort of the homework. And then when the voting comes around, when it comes time to actually vote on it, you've got this body of work that you can listen to and go, oh yeah, Tom Hanks, you know, I haven't really thought about him as a host for a long time because he hasn't been on in a long time.
That's good though. I like kind of the dichotomy with the cast members and then the hosts and the band. So that's all really cool stuff, because today we're going to do our own SNL Hall of Fame of just the cast members. But I think we could take a couple segues here and there and talk about some of the hosts and some of the musical guests as well. Now, have both you guys seen pretty much every episode of SNL? Is that one of kind of the criteria to be able to do this podcast? Because it'd be pretty hard to do that.
I think that would be damn near impossible. I mean, of course, since 1975, but I've enjoyed researching, and I've like going back to see episodes that I haven't seen, refreshing myself. I would say, gosh, if I had to ballpark it, I've probably seen like 75% of the episodes, 80% of the episodes. So it's been a real thrill to just go back and watch, and don't have to watch all of them. I wouldn't expect anybody to have gone back to watch every single episode.
Well, and that's the thing too. Like, I think there's a few things about SNL. Because it's been around for so long, and I'll just get this in here too, because I don't know when we'll get a chance to say this again. There's such a connection and a similarity with SNL and WWF. WWF meaning not WWF, but WWF when Vince McMahon took it over. He's obviously the counterpart to Lorne Michaels. And also the fact that they've built this kind of pulp culture entity that's worldwidely famous, that's all very much hinging on the cast who becomes big stars. And when they become big stars, they go elsewhere. And then you have to build other big stars. And some years, there's a great cast of characters, a great roster. Other years, it's a little bit thin, a little bit skimpy. But the constant, at least until 6 months ago, although now he's back, was Vince and Lorne, who also are in charge of everything. And they can cancel things at the last minute, add things at the last minute. And it doesn't matter how popular you are to the world. If Lorne or Vince doesn't like you, you won't get that push. So there really is a lot of similarities there between the two.
Wow, I hadn't considered it.
Yeah,
it's true, right?
That's bang on, yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It's interesting that you put it like that, Chris, because I was kind of telling Jamie earlier, and whenever I talk about SNL to anybody in general, I really equate it to sports entertainment. So I watch SNL like sports. The SNL is the team. And then you have, like you said, the rotating cast of players. So even if there's, you know, a team has a bad season, SNL has bad seasons sometimes.
Right.
But we follow the team every year to see what's going to come next, see the new cast members or players. So it's funny that you put it that way, because that's exactly how me and a bunch of SNL geeks, Jamie, all of us, it's exactly how we watch SNL is like sports entertainment.
Yeah. And once again, the revolving cast of stars, and then the fact that the constant of Vince and Lauren. But we're talking about SNL here. We're talking about the Hall of Fame. And we have a top 10 list. I think we've both come up with it. All three of us have come up with kind of our top 10 guys and characters and girls, cast members. Let's just say we're not going with characters per se. We're going with overall cast members and their contributions to the show, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So I think we should just start. We'll go with the top 10, and then when other little side segues and stories come up, we'll go with it. And I will say this. The last thing I was going to say before we get into it is SNL, like we mentioned, is such a long-running show, and people have gotten into it, gotten out of it, gotten into it again. It's almost like being like a Kiss fan or something like that. Like sometimes, you know what I mean? Like I got out during the elder years, but I came back in during Crazy Nights. And I think that most of us, at least most of the people that I know that are into SNL, had the biggest connection with the cast that was there when you were in high school.
Big time.
Yes.
That seems to be kind of the perfect time to watch SNL. Like before you can really go out to the bar or something. I remember always getting together with my friends, and girls would come over and you would just watch Saturday Night Live.
Yep.
And that was kind of the rite of passage. Was it the same for you guys?
Absolutely. Monday mornings, you looked forward to like getting off the bus and being the first one to throw out the newest catchphrase.
Yeah.
Or to use it in a funny situation.
Yeah.
And what years were you guys in high school?
I was 89 to 93.
And I was 96 to 2000. So you're right. Like the Will Ferrell years, I was prime high school age for that. And then once I got to college, my viewing of SNL kind of did dip. You know, I was doing whatever college kids do, going out on Saturdays, maybe watching it here and there.
Yeah.
And then once I got more established afterwards, then I got back into it.
And my timeline is a little bit earlier, which would be probably 85 to around 89, 90. You know, that area. I graduated in 88. I wasn't a five-year high schooler. But I remember there was still a lot of buzz because, as we'll get into, the 89, 90 seasons were very, very great. There was a lot of great performers there. And they had a really good run for a very, very, very long time there. So why don't we just jump into it? Why don't we start with number 10? Are we doing this in order?
Let's do it in order. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's do it in order. We'll start from 10 on down. I love this stuff. I've done it with Stephen King novels. We did it with Tarantino movies. So now we're going to do it with SNL cast members with their overall influence. So why don't you start, Jamie? Who do you got at number 10?
I have, you know, this further cements your theory about the high school years, because I've got three people from my high school years on my top 10 list. And the first one is at number 10, and it's Jen Hooks.
Nice.
Who was on for five seasons from 86 to 91. She's probably one of my first like high school crushes on TV. Like
yes.
There was something about her that was very sexy. She was funny as all hell, very versatile. I loved the Sweeney sister character. Any impressions that she got a chance to do, she lit up the screen. I thought she was just fantastic. So she's my number 10.
You know, it's funny. I didn't do an honorable mention, but at one point I had her as, well, she'd be an honorable mention. You really nailed it. There's a couple things about Jan, because I've read quite a lot of the books, and I don't know if you guys have been listening to Spade and Carvey's podcast. Is it Fly on the Wall?
Yeah, Fly on the Wall.
It's so good. And everybody loved Jan Hooks. She's got a great reputation. Obviously, she's not with us anymore. She passed away years ago. But if there's a distinction of possibly the hottest SNL female ever, I agree with you. She was always, I always had a big crush on her. I'd always had a crush on Pamela Stevenson and Victoria. It was Victoria with the high, Victoria Jackson. Mm-hmm. But something about Jan, she was just very, very sexy and very funny.
Yeah.
And never really had, like you mentioned, the Sweeney sisters, which were ring, ring, ring goes the trolley, bang, bang, bang goes the bell.
Right.
But she never really had like the breakout, you know, Rosanna Dana or like some kind
That's
of really
right.
crazy, you know, Molly, the superstar, whatever, those types of things. But she was always solid, almost like a female Phil Hartman in a lot of ways. Like anything she was in, she was great in, even though she didn't really have that character that you could make a movie about.
Absolutely agree.
All right. So good. Yeah, Jan's in there. So what do you think, Thomas? Who's your number 10?
Yeah, Jan would be in my honorable mentions for sure for a lot of those reasons. I actually have kind of a cop-out. I'm not going to spend too much time, but I have a tie for 10th. I want to give both of these people some shine. Vanessa Bayer.
Wow.
Is one of them. She was on the in the cast from, 2010 to 2017. And honestly, this is a combo of like my favorites and just the cast members who have stood out when I've spent all this time researching SNL and going back. And Vanessa did get overshadowed
In
her time as the cast. Yeah, for sure. Like she was in the cast with Kate McKinnon, Sudeikis, and like a bunch of heavy hitters.
Great call.
But she, I think she's maybe the most underrated performer in SNL history.
It's like, I didn't even know who she was until I Googled her. And as soon as you see her, wasn't she like drunk college girl? Do you want to see what I can do?
Yeah. And she was also like, she had these Totino's, a series of sketches that were just brilliant. She had Weekend Update characters that were awesome. So I think Vanessa Bayer needs to get more love amongst the SNL community and viewers at large. And also Will Forte. He was the king of the weird.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's kind of, that humor's right up my alley. I think the show was struggling in the post-Will Ferrell era, but Will Forte always was a breath of fresh air for me when he was on screen. And he was just very weird sensibilities. I love Will Forte. So those two are my tied for 10, Vanessa Bayer and Will Forte.
Will Forte, my co-host in MacGruber, of course, one of the all-time greatest characters in SNL history, which brings me to a great Lorne Michaels story. So I did the movie, and at the time when they had a couple of WWE guys in it, and I said, I'll only do it if I get some lines. I'm not doing it if you just want me to be a background guy, like get somebody else. And they said, no, you get some lines. So they had a couple lines. And when we were shooting it, I was like, Will is a groundling. I'm a groundling, honorary groundling. I'm never official groundling, but I had the honorary groundling status after being performing with them dozens of times. And I said, I'm just going to do improv. So if you watch that scene of MacGruber, the first two lines were what I was supposed to say. And then I just went off in about another six or seven lines and Will followed it, you know? So, and I just, what are they going to do? The worst they're going to say is no, but they liked it and they kept it in there. You know, I can't remember what it was, somebody, the dick jokes are so funny. That's why I say them. That's why I hear them. That's why I listen, or whatever we said back and forth. And it was really great. And so we had a little bit of a connection and Will was super cool. And it was funny. So when I met Lorne earlier in the day, dude, he sounds exactly like Dr. Evil. And you always heard that Mike Myers based Dr. Evil in Lorne Michaels' voice. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hello, Chris, how are you today? Or whatever it was. Like, I can't do it really well, but I was saying it to Will. I was like, dude, he sounds exactly like Lorne Michaels. And Will's like, he's giving me like the stop, like the cut it sign, like stop, stop. I'm like, oh, he sounds just like Dr. Evil. And he's pointing at my chest, and I've got the microphone on.
Oh, Mike's always hot.
And Lauren is at Video Village, which is where they watch. And so he takes the batteries out. He goes, you can't say that, man. Like, Lauren hates that. He denies it till the cows come home that he sounds nothing like. He hates it. And I was like, oh, no. He goes, if he heard you say it, he'd be really mad. I was like, oh, thanks for tip. So I go outside, and someone goes, Lauren wants to talk to you. And I'm like, he heard me. I'm getting fired. I'm getting thrown off the movie. And I walk over there and he's like, hey, hang, Chris. I can't even do it. But he basically, he goes, hey, he's like, I want to tell you something. I'm like, okay, here's where I get my pink slip. He goes, that was a really funny scene. He goes, you're really funny. And I was like, thanks, Lauren. Like, he didn't hear me do the Dr. Evil.
Wow.
But he gave me the compliment of like, you're funny, which led to one last little thing. There was a short period of time when we had WrestleMania in New York City that Vince and Lorne, who are friends, Vince was trying to get one of our guys on as the host of SNL, and he was pitching me because I was really hot at the time. I had just done MacGruber, and I'm not saying it was ever considered, but there was a point where I was told, keep your next week free because they might need you from Monday to Saturday to go to New York for what? To host SNL.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I'm not saying anything other than I know for at one point, at least there was a, well, put them on hold and let's see what we can do.
I was actually going to ask you how close you ever came to hosting SNL. So yeah, that's awesome.
That is legit, number one. Number two was I actually went and watched Will after the movie came out because we were friends for a while and I was going to be on What's Up With That.
Yes.
You know, they have here's like Lindsey Buckingham, you know, Isaac from the Love Boat and Chris Jericho. You just sit there and don't say anything.
Yeah.
But fucking Lorne canceled the sketch.
Oh,
typical Lorne.
Bastard.
And there was one other time that I had some kind of a talk one time when Rock was on. There was a little bit of a, so there's three times I came close, but the one time, and I'm not making this up. This is not a wrestling exaggeration. John Laurinaitis told me, keep next Monday to Saturday off because there's talk of you hosting Saturday Live. And I was like,
wow.
So I think it would have been great.
Yeah, it would have been fun. So you never know. Maybe one of these days. My number 10 is also another super underrated performer, Sherry O'Terry. And I think one of the reasons why people don't talk about her is she really didn't do anything after. She kind of disappeared, and I don't know if she just does stand-up now or whatever the reason, but she was great. You watch her do the Simmer Down Now, and she was one of the cheerleaders with Will Forte. Like, she always has something cool going on. I was always a huge fan of hers. And so is Mick Foley, by the way. A little trivia for you there.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, she sunk into characters so well. Love Sherry O'Terry.
Yeah. That, Simmer Down Now. Who sang Hot Stuff? Donna Summer. Say it backwards. Simmer Down Now.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
I watch this show every day of my life, sir. I think it's the best show on the air ever that has been. It's weird how good it is. It's so strange. In fact, I brought some of my scores for the last 5 years that I thought you would be interested in perusing, you know. March of 81 was particularly a good month for me. I seem to be on fire with knowledge. Also, sir, I'm a tremendous fan of the host of Wheel of Fortune, Mr. Pat Sajak, I must say. Over the years, I've sent him over 40 letters of encouragement.
Number nine. I'll take number nine. We'll go in reverse, a different order. This is one of my all-time favorite SNL characters. The only reason I don't rate him higher is because he was only on for one season. It's the legendary Martin Short,
yeah,
who came on in the Ebersol years when Dick came in, when Lauren was gone, and decided to make SNL more of a he wanted to make it like a sports franchise. So he hired a bunch of free agents, high-priced free agents, which, of course, were Christopher Guest, Harry Shearer, Billy Crystal, and Martin Short. I think Martin Short with Jackie Rogers Jr. and Ed Grimley and just Lawrence, the slow guy, the synchronized swimmer.
Yes.
Great stuff from Martin. But then the next year, him and Shearer quit halfway through the season, and Short and Christopher Guest said, this is way too much work. We're out of here. So that was the end of Martin Short. But I would definitely give him a number nine for me. How about you, Tom?
You know, I actually have sitting right next to me, nice, Martin Short's. Yeah, I must say that's what his autobiography is called. So I had to go grab that. I just finished reading it. He has a lot of cool SNL stories. Just a fascinating guy.
Yeah.
Loved the Dick Ebersol era too. So I'm glad you gave love to him.
For sure.
My number nine is Kate McKinnon.
Oh, nice.
She just left the show. She was on 2012 to 2022. We were talking about Sherry O'Terry sinking into characters. Same with Kate McKinnon. She always sunk into a character. There was a time where people would tune in just to see what Kate was going to do that week. And that's how you know you made it on SNL, when she was the draw on SNL.
Absolutely.
For a few years' time.
She became the breakout star.
Yeah.
Which, once again, as a woman, has only been done a few times before. Gilda Radner and
exactly
her and one of those that is on my list.
And, yeah, and she had to follow Kristen Wiig,
yeah,
too, who we might get to. But that was a tough follow, and she lived up to it.
Big time. I almost feel like, to go the sports route, her rookie season, like, I remember thinking, she's going to be big.
Right.
She's going to be big. Like, it was just out of the gate, you knew that this was somebody special.
Yeah, and you could tell, and she was,
yeah,
for sure, absolutely. Like you mentioned, the fact that she was the focus of the show, and I remember the one one season, but there was a couple of episodes. One episode in particular was like, she's in every sketch. Like, she's all they've got right now, and Lauren knows it. So he's just, and it's not like she's overexposed. She's great in everything. So
yeah,
good call on that one.
I got my number nine, and my number nine is somebody from the original cast, 1977 to 1980, is Bill Murray.
Nice.
It's so tough to, because that feels really low to give him, because he's just so a part of the fabric at this point. But I had to rank the way I had to rank, and he ended up number nine. I think he's hilarious. I think the stuff that he did on the show was really great. He had a ton of pressure joining the show, replacing Chevy Chase.
Right.
The first breakout of the show.
How long was Murray in the cast? It was a very short time, wasn't it?
It was four seasons.
It was four seasons. Okay. For some reason, because Chevy only did one season, right?
That's right.
Gotcha.
That's right.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's the thing. I think, once again, the longer we go, because what are they at 50 years now with SNL? They're getting close.
Coming up on 50. Yep.
75, right? 74. So mm-hmm. the further you get away from the original casting characters, the less you forget. But it's actually very timely that you just said that, because my number eight is also a tie, but I have a reason for it, is John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd.
Ah.
I find they were such the energy of that show. Bill was great, but he's kind of the goofy, like he's kind of the avant-garde comedian. Gilda's awesome. She's very funny. But I find that Dan and Belushi, you know, whether it's the Wild and Crazy Guys, and I know Belushi wasn't that, but Dan was, or the Bumblebee or the Samurai. But to me, the stars of the first 5 years of SNL, and I also think it's one of the reasons why SNL was given the option to continue, was the Blues Brothers. I still think that is the greatest SNL movie of all time. And that might be another podcast we might want to do in the future, yeah. The top 10 SNL movies. But to me, I watch it at least once a year. It still holds up. It's got everything. And those two guys are just fucking great, and they're perfect. And I don't think the movie division of SNL would have maybe lasted if Blues Brothers wasn't a monster hit. Because if it came out first with, like, you know, Stewart Saves Christmas or whatever the hell it was, or, you know, It's Just Pat, they might not have ever been given another chance to do a movie. I'm going with Belushi and Aykroyd.
Nice.
And I'll segue into that, because my eight and seven were Aykroyd and Belushi.
Oh, nice. So that fits too, right?
Honestly, yeah. And the splitting hairs, I think you probably did the right thing by giving him a tie, honestly. And with Aykroyd, we kind of SNL geeks use the term glue guy to describe just a person who can hold together a sketch no matter what. They don't always have to be the star of a sketch, but they just sort of, they're that glue that just holds everything together. And I think Aykroyd was maybe the original glue guy. And there were great ones that followed, but that's what I think about first when I think about Aykroyd. And he was also the greatest pitch man in SNL history too. He's motor mouth. He could just go all day. He was awesome. And Belushi, to me, was the original star. He was the first star.
Breakout star, yeah.
Breakout star. Because, I mean, Chevy was kind of the breakout, but I think Belushi was the real star of the original cast.
Well, the thing is too, if you look at the time that it was, it very much the cocaine fueled 70s, and we know this from John's early demise. But talking with Forte, and like I mentioned, like that's actually a great picture of me, Forte, and Sudeikis walking down the streets of New York with the WWE Tag Team Championships. I gave them; they were walking out. But Will would say, like, dude, like you guys, like we know, but you don't really know. Like it's fucking 6 days a week. Like 18-hour days. He said, like, my office, there's a little blanket on the floor on a pillow. That's where I sleep half the time. Because, like, there's no time to go home. The cocaine-fueled 70s, Belushi's got that crazy energy. And it's very much Farley, and it's very much a little bit less subdued John Candy, which is sad because those guys are all gone. But you can just see, like, you can tell, like, did they do cocaine in the 70s on SNL? Yes. Watch any episode where John Belushi's in it, and you can see it. And it's brilliant, but there's only so much you can go, right?
There's a reason why they only do, like, three shows at a time, and then they have to take a break. Yeah.
There's a great John Belushi with the superhero party, and he comes out of the bathroom, and he's the Hulk, and someone's like, it's not supposed to smell like roses, you know? what you got there, Jamie?
I've got for my number seven, or I guess my number eight rather, is Gilda Radner.
Oh, nice.
She would be my counterpoint to Belushi as a breakout. She was just somebody that everybody inside the show and outside the show had nothing but great things to say about her. You know, with all the infighting and crazy stuff that was going on, she sort of was above it.
Yeah.
Her characters were some of the first, you know, recognizable characters on Weekend Update. And she's really funny.
Here's my favorite thing about Gilda. Like, everyone knows Rosanna Dana because the name is so great.
Yeah.
But what can anyone like imitate what she did? I don't remember what she did. I just remember she was Rosanna Dana. And she said it like Rosanna Dana. But what was the gimmick of Rosanna Dana?
It was a take on an actual newscaster.
Oh,
at the time, in New York City, I think, who had a similar cadence and whatnot. And of course, Gilda did it her way, and she was just so charming and lovable. And the hair, the big hair, yes.
Egyptian hair.
Yeah, that's a great choice, Jamie.
Yeah, it is a great choice. And I think that's another example of somebody, because she passed away so early on. I think she passed away in 81 or 82 or something. But I know she was kind of one of the first casualties, not casualties of the show, but one of the first kind of big stars to pass away from SNL, which kind of people forget about. Yeah, she died years later. So she died in 89.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'd like to once again remind our contestants that there are proper bathroom facilities located in the studio. We've got a real barn burner on our hands. In the lead, we have Kathy Lee Gifford, a first-time player.
Hey, who you calling a player, G? G, what's that mean, Grandpa? Is that what G stands for? Frank, you got a new nickname. It's G.
And you have negative $22,400.
All right, so we move over to number 7. I'll jump in there. I'm going Will Ferrell.
Nice.
And if we added up some box office here, I'm just looking at my other guys. He's probably, at least on my box office, probably number 2 of the top 10 as far as box office stars. Maybe number 3, but probably number 2. And he's done so well in playing the exact same character in every movie that he's been in. But people love Will Ferrell. To this day, we had to watch this movie. I don't know if you guys saw the Christmas movie, Spirited, that they just came out on Netflix for Christmas.
I haven't seen it. I haven't watched
it. It's not great, but we watch it because my wife is like, well, Will Ferrell's in it. We got to watch it. And he's great, and it's just the movie's not that great. But I think he was so good on the show, and he really was the best SNL characters. They connect with you as just every man. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And as we know, he takes his shirt off in every movie. He's kind of chunky guy and not like a leading man looking, great looking guy, but he just makes you smile. And with his George Bush playing with the yarn like a dumb cat, and like, you know, the cheerleader and the piano guy with Anna Gasteyer, like whatever he did, he's a leading man on SNL, but he's also a glue guy too. Everything he does is great.
Yeah, I love him. Again, same type of thing. It was, what was it, season 20 was his first year?
21, yeah.
Season 21?
Wow.
Yeah, 95. So I remember I had just left my first year of university, and I think his first sketch that he did was the shed sketch that he did in his audition, which is like, get off the shed, you know, like where he's just the...
Yes.
It's like Chris said, it's like, it's the prototypical Ferrell character where he's got that, just that simmering rage that is just underneath this affable, funny kind of everyman. And then he just explodes. And I remember seeing it and just thinking, this is great. We're in good hands.
He also has such kind of, like we talked about the avant-garde, he has a lot of that Bill Murray type humor where like they'll just be like, duck, 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 duck show. And then they have like some dog, and the dog stuff's not even funny. You're just waiting for him to say dog show. And then of course the classic Don't Fear the Reaper, Gene, the cowboy. I mean, that's could be, you know, if we were going to do the top 10 sketches, that's gotta be in there.
It's gotta be. I would think in terms of recognizable for sure. And funny.
And what are you thinking when you wrote it? Like, okay, man, I just heard Fear the Reaper on the way to the office today, and there's like this nonstop cowbell. What if we have Ferrell stick his gut out and just play cowbell really funny? All right, let's do it.
Yeah, they knew it would work.
It's not even a sketch, but they knew because they had Will involved, it would work. And it's turned out to be one of the greats of all time.
Yeah. I have 7. Again, going back to my high school years, 7 seasons. Dana Carvey. Dana Carvey was a superstar before we, like before our eyes. It happened before our eyes because there was that season, that terrible season that Lauren took over, the very first one, which is all over the place. And then the next season they came back and it was wonderful. It was a 7-person cast and he was great at everything he did. Yeah, real funny.
Were you going to say something, Thomas, about Ferrell? Are you going to add in there?
Oh, I was going to say that in a few minutes, I was planning on cutting a good promo about my love for Will Ferrell. So
you want to save it? Okay,
so it was a little tease. Yeah.
We go to number 6 now. And here, and as we start getting down to these finals, I'm sure we're going to have a lot of similar ones. So if you feel like jumping in the convo, you want to wait till your own, that's fine. Number 6 is if Ferrell's not number 3 in box office. Fell's not number 2. My number 6 is, and that'd be Adam Sandler. Breakout star of all breakout stars. Once again, you forget if you weren't around in 93, 94, 95, just how massive Adam Sandler was from SNL. This might even be before he started making movies. Like, he was so huge. And also, too, they had such great chemistry with Farley and Spade and Schneider, and all those guys were just, you could tell they were just bros just hanging out and getting, hey, I'm going to do a lunch lady sketch. Oh, that's great. Let's do it. Or like his Hanukkah song. He really focused on the fact he was a Jewish, you know, Leonard Nimoy, half Jewish, you know, I mean, all that stuff was so great. But to me, he had the charm. He probably was banging all the chicks because he's not like a good looking guy, but he's just kind of like this. Oh, what a cute guy. And he's so funny. Come on over, Adam. He had that vibe. And also, too, great chemistry with Farley, the O'Hurley boy. Anything he did was, and think about him, like Opera Man, Cajun Man, Halloween Man. Like, he had so many great characters. Like, oh, I'm crazy pinhead. I got a pin coming out of my head. Give me some candy. you just love it. He was so good at SNL. And they did a great bit too when Michael Jordan was going to retire. They did like a We Are the World type thing, if you guys remember that. And like,
yes,
Farley
yes.
was Meatloaf, and like Mike Myers and the other cat were like the Pretenders. Adam Sandler's Eddie Vedder. And to this day, I can't hear even Flo without hearing Adam Sandler. So again, don't go. Like, it's that's what you hear. Like, he was such a great character. And also to his movies, for the most part, are very, very funny.
Yeah, he was a huge impact on teenage me. Were you guys in the demographic for his CDs?
Yes.
Did you ever listen to his CDs? I wore those out, and I knew every sketch, every track on those CDs. The goat, the principal, all of the, you know, the mom with the, they're all gonna laugh at you.
They're all gonna laugh at you.
I wore all those CDs, so he had such an impact on me.
They said, did you superimpose? I said, what does superimpose mean? I'm a goat.
to this day, I think of that fact. That shit, Garaputo. We just, oh god.
My cousin Todd will talk about Garaputo and Fatty McGee. Yes. Hi guys. Oh Fatty, you're the fattest.
Oh my gosh.
That they're all gonna laugh at you, CD. I've listened to that thing from beginning to end probably 50 times. So great.
Yes.
And great call. Like when who puts out comedies? The comedy album is kind of a dead form of commerce, of media at this point. But Sandler was the last one that I bought. I think I bought all of them. They started getting worse as it went along. But that they're all going to laugh at you was great. Or like, you know, why don't you take out that big fat dick and stroke it for your mama?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. My friends and I would quote it out of the vicinity of our parents. We would quote the hell out of those.
Here's your lunch. It's peanut butter sandwich. We got some melon slices. Why don't you pull out that fat hog for your mama?
Oh, my gosh.
All right, Jamie.
I've got, this is where Kate McKinnon, so I don't want to go too more in detail than Thomas. I just think she's great. Her rookie year, it was all there. She didn't have much to put together. It was fully formed.
Well, and once again, if you look and said, okay, name legit, is there 10 legit breakout stars from SNL? There might be a few more, there might be a few less, but Kate McKinnon is one of them.
Yeah, for sure.
She became an A-lister basically while she was still on the show.
If TV still worked the same way as it did in the 90s, like, she would have had a sitcom for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just we don't make those sitcoms anymore, you know?
And she probably doesn't want one at this point in time. He'd rather have a Netflix streaming series or whatever the hell it is, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, number five. Why don't you do double duty there, Jamie? Who do you got at number five?
All right, I struggled to pick and this person. They flip-flop back and forth many times, but it's Kristen Wiig.
Ah.
And again, what it came down to me was her Nancy Pelosi. Like, the first time I saw her do Nancy Pelosi, her eyes, I remember watching it with my wife and just being like, would you look at this woman? Like, she hasn't blinked in like 3 minutes. She was just radically talented, threw herself into everything. She was somebody else that was doing heavy lifting. She was in 5-6 sketches an episode.
Yes.
She got that very special send-off. That was very cool.
Did she ever have, and I'm sure she does, but did she ever have like a really popular reoccurring character?
Yeah, she's got quite a few. Target Lady would be one.
Oh, she's Target Lady. That's right. I thought it was Sherry, but she was Target Lady. Yeah. Yeah.
She's like Gilly, Penelope, Dunice, the one with the little weird hands.
The mutant.
Yeah, pretty much.
The big forehead and the,
yeah, the little baby hands.
The baby hands. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. All right. I'll do number five for me. Probably the ultimate glue guy, Phil Hartman.
Yeah.
It was funny. We did a watch along of Jingle All the Way just a couple of weeks ago. And I was like, Phil Hartman's got to be top 10 of all time. And the three other guys that did it were like, no, it's top five for sure. And while I did my little list here, he made top five because I think he probably had, gosh, almost 10 seasons or so. I don't know the exact details of that, but everything he did was rock solid. And whether he was the star, whether he was in the background, you need someone to play Reagan, he'll do it. What was it called? Unfrozen caveman lawyer.
Who oh my used God.
His, yeah. I don't understand these black boxes, but damn it. If they can talk to me, I can't believe it. You know, it's like, you know, so good at that. The anal retentive chef.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even know what anal retentive meant when I was a kid. Like, what does that even mean?
No, me neither.
Just take everything and put it like into a little shell and put a little bag and then put it in another little bag and then put it in the little wastebasket with a little.
We got to discard of this refuse right now and put double aluminum foil on it. And yeah. Oh my God.
So good, man. Like everything he did was just amazing. And like,
yeah,
just a guy that everything he did on SNL was amazing. The other one I always loved, it's kind of a little no one. I'm going to butcher it totally, but he's like the old school actor from the 40s.
Oh, yes, yes.
What do
yes.
they say about my performance? They say you're terrible. They say you're brutal. They say you're the worst thing that's ever on the screen. What's the word on the street?
Yes, give it to me.
Give it to me straight. That's it. Yeah. The people are rioting. The people say you're terrible. The people hate you. What's the word on the street? Like, he's just so, like, it's just, I think it was probably a 10 to 1 sketch. It was just a throwaway.
That was a Groundlings sketch.
Was it really?
John Lovitz and Phil Hartman brought that from the Groundlings.
Which is so funny in when I perform with the Groundlings, and to this day, it's on Melrose in Los Angeles. The name of the theater is the Phil Hartman Theater.
Oh, that's so cool.
I did the Cooking with Gas probably a dozen times. Cooking with Gas was, I can't remember. It was like guys that weren't quite there yet, alumni and guests, Mindy Sterling and Michael Hitchcock. They kept bringing me back. And I just a little Groundlings trivia. They always told me it's the Phil Hartman Theater holds 99 people. They said, if you crush it, you just crushed it in front of 99 people. If you bomb, you just bombed in front of 99 people. So don't worry about it. Like, it's not a big deal. Just go up there and just have fun. But Phil Hartman, just one of the all time greats. And
absolutely,
to this day, anything that I see him in makes me laugh.
He was my number four.
Oh, okay.
Kristen Wiig was my number five, and he was my number four. So I'll just repeat everything you just said. That was great.
Who do you got at four, Thomas?
Phil Hartman was my number three.
Okay.
So I talked about glue guys. I mean, Phil Hartman was, to me, the like prototypical kind of glue guy. I mean, you mentioned, too, his Unfrozen caveman lawyer. He did a great Ed McMahon, Frank Sinatra, nice. His Bill his Clinton. So
yes,
his Bill Clinton, when he walked into the McDonald's,
you're going to eat those fries.
That was one of the best sketches. And Phil Hartman was formative as far as my comedy palates and instincts. I was a weird kid who teenager, even 12 years old, whose favorite SNL guy was Phil Hartman. That's kind of weird for a kid to gravitate toward Phil Hartman's sensibilities, but he was like my guy from that era.
Remember Phil Hartman's Sinatra was great. Talking about Sinead O'Connor. What's with the bald broad?
Yes, absolutely. So Hartman was my number three. My number five was actually Bill Hader.
Oh, okay.
To me, he was built for sketch comedy. Like if I was to go in a lab and build a sketch performer, it might come out as Bill Hader.
Yes.
Honestly, like he could execute the weird, clever, slapstick, anything you need from Bill Hader. He could do that.
Impressions.
His Al Pacino, James Carville.
James Carville.
Yeah. I don't know if you ever saw this, Chris, the Greg the Alien. It was the Game Time sketches. So the whole premise was it was a sports call-in show and the callers, and Greg was the co-host, but he was clearly an alien, but they were trying to hide the fact that he was an alien. And all the callers would say, so you want to talk about the Jets? And then he would say, well, no, I want to talk about Greg's obviously an alien. So I want to know, do you come in peace or should we be worried about it? And just Bill Hader's mannerisms were just out of this world, man. Bill Hader, my number five.
And a guy who's probably been in like 200 movies and some of them for like 30 seconds, but you know, the cop in Superbad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
A black and white scientist in the Pineapple Express. Like he's in all those movies and sometimes it's for like 3 minutes, but it's always great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
One last thing I just want to say about Phil Hartman is I was just kind of Googling some of his stuff. One of the all-time greatest running-going sketches was Tonto Frankenstein.
Yes!
Yes.
And Tarzan.
John Lovitz. Yeah. And Kevin Nealon.
Kevin Nealon, John Lovitz, and Phil Hartman. And all three of them couldn't speak English, so they were just kind of like, you know, it's like Frankenstein, Tonto, Tarzan, saying, wish you a Merry Christmas, laughing the whole time. Hartman's laughing. He's like, fire bad.
Yes.
He's like falling down.
That's exactly what I was thinking, yeah.
So good, man. Such good stuff. That was a great year. I think that was 88, which was my high school graduation year, but good stuff there.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma is focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter your search based on the qualities that are most important to you. Then you can book a free 15-minute consultation call with any therapist you're interested in seeing, so you can get a feel for whether they're the right fit before you commit to a full-length session. Alma also makes it easy for mental health care providers to navigate insurance. That's why 95% of therapists in their directory accept insurance for sessions, so you can find care that's affordable without stressing about the paperwork. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy60 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy60.
Simmer down now. Excuse me? Everybody want to return something, so just simmer down now.
I wasn't even getting excited.
Simmer down now!
What are you talking about? This is ridiculous.
Simmer!
We move on to number four. I'm not going to change. It might be a little bit low for you guys, but I'm going with Eddie Murphy, who is the highest box office.
Yes.
and probably to this day still the biggest star to ever come from SNL. Can we agree with that?
Yeah.
During his time on SNL, for sure.
I'm talking overall.
Yeah. Yeah.
Overall, yeah, he might be.
Who's the biggest star that's like the most kind of mysterious and the biggest, and people talk about him? And I mean, he's so great. So great. And he's just, what is he, 21, 22 years old?
He's just a kid. Yeah. He's
barely.
Like, they must have been going, oh my gosh, like, we better get this guy in every sketch because he's gone like in a year.
Yeah,
but he has like James Brown, the James Brown Celebrity Hot Tub, which was amazing. Hot tub, ow, full of water, gonna make you wet. Ow. Everybody in my school said that.
Really?
Oh yeah, this was probably grade 9 or grade 8.
You're so spoiled.
Totally. And everyone, of course, the Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood and Gumby and Alfalfa, or sorry, Buckwheat Sings the Hits.
Oh,
yes.
So great. Remember when he played the white guy?
Yes, on the bus.
Yeah.
And what is it? White Like Me is the sketch?
That's right.
White Like Me.
He goes.
What a fantastic sketch.
And of course, he talks like a total dirty white man. Hello, I would like to buy this newspaper. And the guy's like, just take it. What? Just take it. With another a very, very great performer who's not a top 10 or maybe the top 20, but was always great. It was James Belushi in those years.
Yeah.
Always funny.
He was underrated.
He was.
Jim Belushi was, he was good on the show.
Yeah, I agreed.
He was. I just, not to get off the Eddie trip, but I just went and watched. I told you, Jamie, that there's, if you go to archive.com, you can find some of those great episodes. And I found Ed Asner and the Kinks with James Belushi's all over that thing. And then Christopher Reeves and Santana is another one. It's all James Belushi. He's everywhere.
Christopher Reeves and Santana.
But Eddie, also, like we said, biggest star probably ever in SNL history. It was a big deal when he came back to host it.
The biggest of deals. You're right. Yeah.
Oh, huge. And it lived up to it. Love that. That was super fun. What a fun episode.
Yeah.
The Gumby. You did a Gumby. You did the, remember the weird pumpkin carving or something like that? Where it was just like
It was the cake.
The cake. Yeah.
It was like a bake-off or something. Yeah.
And then I think that was right before the pandemic, I believe. And then I remember around that time, there was all these rumors that Eddie was going to go back on tour and do stand-up.
Yeah,
that's right.
I mean, think about that. Eddie Murphy, we all, at least as when I was a kid, 12, 13, everybody had Eddie Murphy Raw.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy Delirious, talk about comedy albums. And this guy was over the top. Like, there was no rules. You know, there was gays that I can't even use the words that he said, and bad words for girls and guys and blacks and whites. And I think if he's going to go back on tour, he's going to go back on tour like Chappelle. You can't cancel me, because he can't go back and not be Eddie Murphy. Like, he was so like, oh my gosh, you can't say that. Even in 1983, you can't say that.
I remember watching either Raw or Delirious, I forget which one, with my best friend in probably grade 8, like on VHS. And we were literally as close to the TV as you could be, because we had it turned down so low so my parents wouldn't hear it.
Right.
We weren't even watching the performance. We were literally just listening to this thing and dying laughing, like just absolutely dying.
There's literally quotes from that we used to say in my junior high school. If I said it right now on this stream, you'd be like, Chris, you got to edit that out. Like, everybody, if you've listened to it, you know what I'm talking about. But
Absolutely,
how it was back then. You just say those things. And it was like, everything he did is just so crazy, over the top.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. T saying he's going to fuck somebody up the ass, like all that sort of stuff, right? Eddie, in the SNL world, one of the all-time greats on the show. And definitely, in my opinion, the biggest star that ever came out of SNL to this day.
I'm so curious what your top three is going to be now, if he's number four.
Yeah, that's a heavy hitter.
I got a little bit of a different top three than most.
Yeah.
Because I go what I like best and what I still like best when I watch. So who you got for number four, Jamie?
I had Phil Hartman for number four. Mine are all repeats at this point, so I can just sort of duck in, because my number four was Phil Hartman. Three was Bill Hader. Two was Will Ferrell. And number one was Eddie Murphy.
Wow. So there's a thing. So you for sure didn't even have my top two.
Yeah.
So we'll leave it at that. What do you got for number four, Thomas?
So I'll put a pin in the Eddie Murphy discussion, because he was actually my number two.
Okay.
He almost literally saved Saturday Night Live from cancellation.
Agreed.
That was a rough period after Lorne Michaels and the original cast left. Jean Dumanian was the producer who took over for Lorne Michaels. She didn't do so well, probably a lot of different reasons behind the scenes.
Let's talk about some of those, like Charles Rocket and like Tony Rosato, Robin Duke, like very low level. Yeah
it was Gail Mathias and some of those cast members, and not to disparage them, but it was just a rough time for the show in general. But Dick Ebersol took over, and one of his first things was, we need to highlight this Eddie Murphy kid,
right?
Because he has so much potential. And Eddie Murphy's characters and his presence, honestly, it's not hyperbole to say that he saved Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great call. And you're right about that. Because if you've studied, obviously the three of us have, like, the story of this show is not like, oh, it was just every year it's on. Like, there was, like, Lorne left because he wanted to take like a year break. They're like, no, we're still going. Like you said, they brought in this Jean girl and they brought in Ebersol. Those years are bad. And after Martin Short and those guys left, then you got into these other rocky years of, like, that was the Robert Downey Jr. and Anthony Michael Hall. People don't realize those guys were cast members, and those Joan Cusack,
Randy Quaid.
And it's terrible.
Yeah.
And I came out of it like, oh, Martin Short, and these are great. And this is so funny. And watch this thing. I don't, and you know, you're, when you're a kid, if something turns you off, you're done. We go on to something else, man. But they got through those lean years. But like you mentioned, Eddie really was the guy in a lot of ways, the same way that I think the Sandler, and the Sandler was a couple years later, like Lovitz and Dana Carvey.
Yeah.
Dana Carvey's got to be the next one that kind of saved it, right? Like in about 87 or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole cast.
Lovitz, Hartman, those guys. Jan Hooks.
Yeah, for sure. Nora Dunn. Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. And actually my number four, yes, but my number four, Dana Carvey. And I don't know if we really talked about Dana at length, but like iconic characters, impressions. He was one of the most naturally gifted performers on the show. Like he popped whenever he was on the screen. And he was, we mentioned the cast just now.
Yeah.
Phil Hartman, he was on with John Lovitz and Mike Myers, and Dana just popped off the screen. And him doing squirrely little characters like George Bush, Ross Perot, dude. Johnny Carson, Church Lady.
Dude, it goes
like,
on.
Iconic.
Chopping broccoli, chopping broccoli.
Chopping broccoli.
Hey,
you know what?
Hey.
Derek Stevens, that Chopping Broccoli and the Church Lady were in his first episode ever.
Oh, wow.
From day one. That was, yeah, that was Dana's first episode on the show.
What a debut.
Right?
So Dan is my number two. I couldn't agree with you more. I think, like, for me, we mentioned, like, you know, 85 to 89, like, Dana Carvey was the best. And the funny thing is, and he says on his podcast, his movie career is terrible.
Yes.
Take out Garth and he's like Turtle Man and all this, like, it's Master of Disguise. Like, yeah, it's just terrible. And they never found that vehicle for him to be the star that he, I remember there was the Dana Carvey show.
Yeah.
It lasted like two episodes. It was over. Like they just pulled it. Now, like there's eight more episodes that we pull
well,
it.
Well, when the first sketch of your show is Bill Clinton milking babies, like breastfeeding,
yes,
that might turn off the general populace as a whole. That was the Dana Carvey show.
But you're right, dude. Like you think about him, like everything he did with like you mentioned, like I don't think I've ever seen Ross Perot in my life, the real Ross Perot, nor do I ever have to, because to me, there is no Ross Perot other than Dana Carvey. He's Ross Perot. and same with George Bush. Like, nah, gotta die, nah, gotta die. Like, I don't remember him really saying that. We're from Canada, so like...
He did.
But everybody thinks of George Bush as Dana Carvey.
Yeah.
And like you said, in Church Lady, and you mentioned all these like more... Remember Harry the Head Wound? Head Wound Harry?
Yes.
You know, like Grumpy Old Man.
Mm-hmm.
Like these are like C-level Carvey characters that like...
And we liked it.
And I mean, it was the way it was. And we liked it. My least favorite of all time, Tim Meadows, would be begging for a Head Wound Harry or begging for a fucking Grumpy Old Man. Like these are Dana Carvey throwaway gimmicks, you know?
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, the imitations, one of the all-time greatest skits ever is when Dana plays Mick Jagger. And Mick Jagger plays Keith Richards.
Yes.
Yes.
Dude, I mean, that is so fucking great.
Yep.
If you guys haven't seen that watching or listening at home, go Google it. It's the best. Like, it's like so good. I had Dana Carvey on Talk as Jericho. Actually, Dennis Miller got him on. Miller's like, you want Carvey on? I'll get Carvey on for you.
That was a good Dennis Miller.
Amazing. Jeez, I'll give him a call. So Dana comes on. Never met before. No idea who I was. So gracious. So funny. And I said to him, what's the most obscure imitation that you do? He goes. So one time, Neil Young was the musical guest. You probably remember. They played Rockin' in the Free World. Kind of became a hit because of that. And like, so I'm hanging out with them. And, you know, you hang out with the guys for the week. Like, they show up, they do this thing. You do a couple rehearsals. You're hanging out for a bit. And he said Farley was off his rocker, just running around, going crazy. And Dana's like, who's that frat kid? He's pretty funny. Like, he did this great Neil Young of like, I can't do it right now. Who's the frat kid? He's pretty funny. It's like the most obscure imitation, but he nailed this Neil Young imitation. I was like, dude, that's the best ever.
He's a master.
Yeah.
So where are we officially at though?
So I want to hear your number three, Chris, because my number three was Phil Hartman.
Yeah.
And we discussed Phil, but you teased a pretty unique, maybe top three. So
no, we've already discussed her. My number three is Kristen Wiig.
Kristen. Okay.
Oh, right. Okay.
Once again, I think if you're talking about a true breakout star, Kristen is one of them. She was great as the MacGruber girl, and that's where I got to know her. It was on the MacGruber sketch. She actually introduced me to her mom and dad.
Oh, wow.
Which I thought, does that mean we're supposed to go on a date now? But never happened. Like we said, much like Sherry or Terry or Gilda Radner or any of these amazing females that have been on the show, to become the breakout star of the show, Kate McKinnon, as a woman is never easy. And she did it. And I think, once again, if you talk about, it's not a Saturday Live inspired sketch, but her movie Bridesmaids might be the funniest movie with an SNL alumni in it.
Yeah.
Like, it's so great.
It's so great.
It really is. And once again, it holds up, and she's, you know, she's cute. She's not gorgeous. She's cute. She appeals to everybody. She's just like a girl next door who would be really funny.
Yeah.
And if you look at her, like I pointed out in one of our episodes, we did an episode on Kristen Wiig in season 2 of the SNL Hall of Fame. And what I noticed is she would be a wonderful silent actor. She did a lot of stuff with her body and her facial expressions.
Great call.
There were a couple of sketches that she didn't even have any lines. And just the way she moved her body on screen was just hilarious and great. It was almost like probably not Chaplin or Buster Keaton-esque, but as close as you can get to it. That's something that stood out.
No, I agree with you. She's got really great facials. And I think she's another one of those ones that when, because they had her kind of, she never did Weekend Update, did she?
She did characters on Weekend Update.
She would do characters,
but
yeah.
Not like, yeah.
Yeah. But she was kind of just, once again, one of those glue girls this time. Just, you need something, you put her in there. So Wig's my number three. Who's your number three? Have we gone through the number threes?
Mine was Phil Hartman.
Mine's Hader.
Gotcha. Now, number two is Dana for me.
Will Ferrell.
Eddie Murphy.
All right.
Remember when you were in the Beatles and you did that album Abbey Road, and at the very end of the song, it goes, and in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. You remember that?
Okay, so let's get to our number one.
Mine was Eddie Murphy, so you guys know that already. So
Thomas, I don't know, because neither of you guys have mentioned my number one yet, which tells me that probably your number one is the same as mine.
I don't know that it is. I think you already mentioned. So my number one's Will Ferrell.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Wow. So we haven't even mentioned your number one.
You haven't mentioned my number one.
Yeah. And I think I know who yours is, but Will Ferrell, I've done a lot of research and gone back and prepped for this podcast. I think Will Ferrell is the greatest of all time. And to me, it's like a no-brainer.
Well, let's discuss. Why do you say that?
Yeah.
He's the greatest combination of quality and quantity. So he was in a ton of sketches, and I think his batting average was so high relative to the number of sketches that he was in. We had mentioned his breakout characters like the cheerleaders, Celebrity Jeopardy. He was Alex Trebek.
He was, yeah.
He was George W. Bush. That's what he became known on, like, maybe a national scale in many ways, was for George W. Bush. He did Cowbell. He did weird things like the Neil Diamond. If nobody's ever seen, what was it, the story, Neil Diamond storyteller
yeah,
sketch?
Great call.
Where he has a very bizarre, odd take on Neil Diamond that almost only Will Ferrell could. Oof. So it was like Neil Diamond telling stories, but it was stories about him, like, thinking of this, making up this song while he got drunk and killed a drifter, kind of things like that. Like,
yeah.
And he helped save the show too. After a bad season 20, they were talking rumblings about cancellation, and Will Ferrell came in and, along with a really good cast in and of itself, but Will Ferrell came in and almost saved the show from disaster. And I just think if we were able to quantify it with numbers and stats, I think Will Ferrell would come out on top almost rather easily too. So he's my number one, and there's maybe a little gap between Will Ferrell and everybody else on my list.
Which is great. And like I said, I think once you get down to these final five or four, it could be pretty much interchangeable. And I agree with you.
Yeah.
My number one, who I can't believe you guys didn't even put in your top 10, is Chris Farley.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
To me, like, dude, like, to me, from this is what I like. I think Farley was almost a detriment to the show. And I'll tell you the reason why. You couldn't put him as a minor player in anybody else's skit because he's too funny. Like, anything you'd give him, like the Pepper Boy, it's hilarious. Adam Sandler, yes. Dana Carvey, and there you go. Would you like, Pepper? Why, yes, I would love some fresh ground pepper. And it's like, and they start laughing. He has one line. He's got these stupid chops for no reason. Mm-hmm. And like, that to me is the epitome of Chris Farley. We can't put him in the background. He's too funny. He's too funny. And when you listen to Spade and Carvey's podcast, you can tell everyone loved this guy. Obviously, he was off his rocker, and we know about his demise. But on that show, dude, you couldn't lose with him. I can't think of one sketch that wasn't funny with Chris Farley in it. Like, obviously, maybe my all-time favorite sketch is the Chippendales with Patrick Swayze.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, he's, like I said, he's Meatloaf. He's Mama Cass. Like, there's no, he doesn't know who Mama Cass is. Just put a long hippie wing on him, stick him in the corner, and it's funny.
Yeah.
You know, Dom DeLuise on The Tonight Show, where he's got the piss bag and he just starts pissing his pants.
People still quote Matt Foley to this day. I see people on Twitter who are like 20 years old quoting a sketch that happened before they were even born, like Van Down by the River.
I never thought of that.
And even when it's like, okay, the sketch is getting a little bit long in the tooth, we do, here's me, here's you, here's them, here's me, and he falls to the fucking table.
Yeah.
That's the case. So the table is like, it's made of paper. It's stupid, but it's so funny. And Spade and Christina Applegate, they're laughing.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't have this guy on the show. Fucking McCartney, greatest ever. The Chris Farley Show.
Oh,
hey, Paul. Oh, gosh. Remember when you were in the Beatles? Well, yes, I do, Chris. That was awesome. Do you know how many interviews I've had with these poor, and God bless them all, I love them all, but these, I'm like, dude, that was a Chris Farley show. I'm like, the publicist would be, well, that was a Chris Farley show, or my PA would be, that's a Chris Farley show. Hey, Jericho, remember that time you fought Shawn Michaels? That was awesome. I'm like, Chris Farley show.
Remember Y2J?
Yeah, literally.
That's so funny.
Chris must have totally saw some fan that said that to him. He's sitting with Paul McCartney, like, That's another unsung hero of SNL from the musical side. Paul McCartney.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So good. Super subtle with everything he does. Very dry. But, man, Chris Farley, to me, like I said, the biggest example I can give to you is that fresh ground pepper sketch. And as soon as I said it, you both started laughing.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't even the star of the show. The O'Hurley boy. For God's sakes, can you please let the boy? And his wig's flying all over the place. And Cindy in the mall.
Yeah.
Would you like some ice? No, I'm hungry.
Yes. You know, Chris Farley is actually how Jamie and I connected.
Yeah.
Because Jamie put out a feeler on Reddit seeking a guest for season one of the SNL Hall of Fame. And I responded, said I would love to talk about Chris Farley. And he had me on as actually a guest on season one of the SNL Hall of Fame talking about Chris Farley. So this is right up my alley. I was the guest for season one.
But yet you didn't put him on your top 10.
I know. He was the toughest cut. And I knew one of you guys was going to talk about him. And I wanted to give Will Forte and Vanessa Bear some shine.
That's a good call, though. I'm glad you did.
Right.
But I love Chris Farley. And I love that you had him that high on your list.
Me too.
There's a great, if you listen to the, once again, the Spade and Carvey podcast, they did a tribute to Chris Farley because he just passed away. I think it's maybe 30 years ago, whatever it was. And they said they had Mike Myers on, and they had like Chris Farley's mom and all these other people. And they used to go to this steakhouse called Barbarians in Toronto. Is Barbarians still there?
Yeah.
They used to go there all the time. And Spade tells this great story that Chris, there was a pats of butter that every bite of steak he took, he put a pat of butter on it.
Wow.
Not on the steak, like every bite. And he said, it needs a hat.
Oh, yes.
Oh, wow. Like,
it needs a little hat. And it's like, they told the story. You could, like, you know, if we ever met Chris Farley, that's something he would do. So I think maybe I've gotten in my own head. Anytime I see Chris Farley on SNL, I just start laughing. El Nino. That's Spanish for the Nino. So perfect. Just all around genius. But like we said, you can't really go wrong with any of the members that we said. And there's so many others. I mean, like, you know, if you would have said, I mean, Rob Schneider or you know, Garrett Morris or, you know, all these types of Lorraine Newman. Jane Curtin. We didn't mention any of those eras. The list goes on and on. Billy Crystal was great every time he was on, even though it was only for one season. Gary Kroger, we mentioned James Belushi, and like there's so many. Tim Kazurinski,
yeah.
Sweet Chuck from Police underrated. Academy. Lots of underrated guys. And I'm just kind of not even thinking of everybody right now, but it's been a great kind of trying to tie down top 10. But before we go here, let's talk about some of the great bands.
Okay.
Do you guys have some of the bands that show? Because there's a couple for me that really stand out as my all-time favorites. Why don't you start, Jamie?
Oh, goodness. Well, I think back to that Neil Young performance. That was definitely transformative for me.
Who's the frat kid? He's pretty funny.
Whether I was just the right age or not, but it was, he was so rock and roll and so badass.
And that was rocking in the free world, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it was such a great performance. Even on the Conan O'Brien podcast, he talks about being there when Neil Young performed that and just saying that the writers, everybody was standing watching because it was just so impressive to see it go down.
Yeah, yeah. So much energy. I remember that. I think that song might have just come out or maybe it was early on, but that one just really, really resonated, you know?
Yeah.
I'll throw one here. It's one of my all-time favorite episodes because it has the Jackie Rogers Jr. $100,000 jackpot wad on it, which is, to me, my all-time favorite sketch with Christopher Guest and Sammy Davis Jr. Or sorry, Billy Crystal and blackface playing Sammy Davis Jr. I'm like, you could never do that nowadays.
Oh, right. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh,
it wasn't insulting anybody. It was super funny, but just right. You can't do that, right? Different times.
It was the time, mid-80s.
Yeah. But the Kinks were on, and it was the Kinks when they put out an album called Word of Mouth. And I remember recording it when I was in grade 9, which is probably, I think it was the Christmas of 84. And I must've watched that video over and over again. And I just stumbled onto this archive.com and I found, I've watched this Kinks. They play two songs called Do It Again and Word of Mouth from this Word of Mouth album. I just love it. I don't know why, just the energy is there. And the fact that the Kinks in 84 still were like cool.
Yeah.
Like it's like, they shouldn't be because they're from 64. But I don't remember seeing the Stones on SNL or I mean, I've seen McCartney, but it just seemed that the Kinks on SNL was just so SNL. They're a legendary band. They're not as legendary as these guys, but they're cool enough to be on SNL. I thought that was really cool for me.
Yeah.
What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, one that sticks out to me is we actually covered Dave Grohl on season 2 of the SNL Hall of Fame. And I'm going to specifically say Foo Fighters really come to mind. And there was a specific performance. It was the day that they announced Joe Biden had won the presidency. But their performance of Times Like These just sends chills. Like me talking about it right now, I have chills. It's maybe my favorite performance, musical performance ever on SNL is Foo Fighters doing Times Like These. It was in November of 2020. And Dave Grohl is just so synonymous to me with SNL. He's been on with Nirvana, them Crooked Vultures, Foo Fighters. He's performed with Tom Petty.
Dude, Tom Petty offered him the drum gig after that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If people don't know that.
Yeah. It's Dave's favorite show. Dave Grohl, he has a wonderful autobiography.
It's great.
But he cites SNL as his favorite show in his autobiography.
I'm surprised they have never asked him to host SNL because he'd be great at
it. Yeah, you're right.
He really would.
I think he would too.
I think he would kill it. Yeah.
You know, and once again, talking about a great musical guest who was a great host, Justin Timberlake, talking about Dick in a Box or like Bring It On Down to Spatulaville or whatever.
Yes.
Like, great. To do both is not easy. And like Timberlake was one of those guys. I think Dave could easily do that. It'd be great to see him. But yet so many bands that have never been on SNL, Guns N' Roses have never been. Metallica might have been once, but never like when they were younger. It's kind of been more Metallica now.
Yeah.
Kiss has never been on, like GNR, like those type of bands have never been on. It's interesting to me.
Kiss is surprising because it's like they almost run the same spectrum, right? Like Kiss started in 72 or 73.
Yes. New York in the 70s, there's not a more synonymous New York band than Kiss. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't think Rush was ever on, you know, any of those bands, right? So
we actually wanted to give you and the listeners a little preview of, speaking of music, this is going to tie in a little preview of something that we do on the SNL Hall of Fame podcast.
Oh, yes.
If you want to be a contestant, Chris, in a game that we play on the SNL Hall of Fame podcast.
What's the game?
So it's Two Truths and a Lie. For us today, it's SNL Rock and Wrestling edition of Two Truths and a Lie.
Are we playing it now or playing it on your show?
Let's do it now.
Oh, now. Okay. Yeah. I was hoping it'd be the Jamie Do $100,000 jackpot wad, in which case I'm going to play for sure.
All right. So I'm just going to name, it's going to be real quick. I'm going to say 3 statements, one of which is a lie. So you have to spot the lie.
Okay.
The first statement, the Commodores were a musical guest when a wrestler hosted SNL. The Replacements were a musical guest when a wrestler hosted SNL. And AC/DC was a musical guest when a wrestler hosted SNL. So which one of those is the lie?
That's so easy. It was AC/DC, man.
Well, is that the lie?
Oh, sorry. Which one's the lie? Yes. Sorry. No, the Commodores is a lie. And what's the other one you said?
The Replacements.
Replacements. That's a lie. Yeah. It was AC/DC.
Okay. So the Replacements was the lie. So they're pretty infamous with SNL, but actually the Commodores were a musical guest when Hulk Hogan and Mr. T hosted SNL.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was an interesting pairing, the Commodores. And then you're right, because I'm sure you remember this, AC/DC was the musical guest when who hosted?
The Rock. And yeah. And that's when Vince McMahon said, live from New York. And I was in the company. I was so angry that I wasn't invited to that because Big Show
had a great, yeah. So it was Big Show, Triple H, and Mick Foley were on there. So what was the, did you guys talk about that? Like in the locker room amongst the boys, like The Rock hosting SNL? Like,
I just remember it was a big deal. And to me, it was like just as cool because I'm an AC/DC fanatic. And I think that might be the only time AC/DC's ever been on as well.
I think so.
But I was like, you know, me too. That's the same reason why they asked me to do MacGruber. And I said, only if I get lines. Like I was pissed that I wasn't on.
Yeah.
Because the original thing, this is a long story that we can go into another whole podcast, but the original plan for that WrestleMania was Triple H, Big Show, Rock, and Jericho with the McMahon in every corner. And there's even a billboard on Sunset Boulevard with that dynamic. And then Vince pulled me and put Mick Foley in. So it's like I was should have been on Saturday Night.
What could have been? I had to go double check to see if you weren't on, honestly, because I was like, I don't think he was, but I had to go double check.
No, I wasn't. Yeah. And another good one was that SNL with Mr. T and Hulk is another classic where they actually did We Are the World talking about like bodyguards. I remember Billy Crystal was Prince.
That's right.
One of those chicks was Cyndi Lauper. It might have been Pamela Stevenson or somebody of that ilk. Mm-hmm. James Belushi was Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
Like it's a great... Great.
And they did the great Fernando's Hideaway.
Yes, and
he's got the
workout bar.
Yeah.
That was great promotion for the first WrestleMania. That's why they were on. Yeah, they were headlining.
That's right. And once again, there's always been the connection with Vince and Lauren mm-hmm. since that WrestleMania. You know what I mean? So
yeah, definitely.
I guess it's just a New York thing, like another New York thing.
Like, dude, I mean, obviously, like we said, Lauren in New York and Vince in New York, tell me they didn't see each other around.
Yeah.
And both are probably like, oh, you got this SNL thing? You got this WWF thing? Oh, tell me more about it. Yeah, we sold it at Madison Square Garden. Yeah, we did, 10 million views on a Saturday night. And here's the other thing. If you remember during the Ebersol time, I think it was every 6 weeks, 5 Saturdays would be SNL, and then 1 Saturday would be Saturday's main event.
That's right.
Main event. Yep.
That was all Ebersol, and that's Vince. And that's, you know what I mean? So there's always that connection where SNL took a sidestep so that WWF could come in.
Yeah, it just made sense that Vince and Lorne would find a way, or Dick Ebersol, too, in the mid-80s, would find a way to work together.
That's amazing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We could do another whole show, another bunch of shows. This has been great.
Absolutely, yeah.
I love the top 10 list, so we'll have to come up with another, maybe top 10 sketches or top 10 hosts, maybe, something along those lines.
Yeah, would love to.
Great talking to you guys, and Chris Farley is the greatest ever.
Thanks for doing this. This is great.
Thank you.